Hello, I'm Dr. Guy Hetchan, speaking on behalf of GLOBE, the campaign for global legislation outlawing biotechnology experimentation. Today I want to present 20 reasons that biotechnology experimentation should be outlawed. Here in New Zealand, the National Party, with the support of ACT, have announced that if elected, they will recklessly ignore the lessons of the pandemic by deregulating biotechnology based on imaginative but wholly unsubstantiated promises of benefit and on oversimplified, discredited ideas about how genes work. In fact, we know only a limited outline of how genes function. What we don't know is a far larger area of knowledge than what we do know. I'm going to present these 20 precautionary scientific reasons to outlaw biotechnology experimentation. The first one is complexity. I think I first became aware of this issue in 2017. When Tal Zak, the chief medical officer of Moderna, said in a presentation, "We are hacking the software of life, the genetic code, and that has profound implications for the cure of everything, from flu to cancer." He presented a number of highly simplified diagrams about RNA technology. These were very, very misleading. They simplified what amounts to a genetic system. There are about 10 billion atoms in a single chromosome, and we have 46 of them. There are more than 42 million proteins in the cytoplasm of a cell. Tal Zak's diagram sort of gaily had a picture of some genetic information, an RNA molecule, invading this complex structure of 42 million proteins in the cell and sort of simply changing the way it worked. In fact, the processes that connect these elements and render their functions stable and exact are multidimensional, and they're only vaguely understood. We have here a case of a sort of alchemy that is going on, where it's a sort of try it and see. We'll push this in and we'll see what happens. And only now, as the disaster that is the pandemic is unfolding, are we beginning to see just how awful the results can be. The second area is precision. The idea that genetic structures which support life arose from a series of random events, the kind of Darwinian evolutionary theory, has given rise to the idea that genes may be edited safely or randomly, in fact. The truth is that genetic structures are hugely precise. Replacing even a small sequence of genetic information can overturn the function of genes as a whole, the function of the DNA as a whole. And this, we know, can give rise to inherited defects. The third area is containment. Laboratory accidents and organism escapes are far more common than we have been led to believe. Genetic material is highly mobile and interactive. Under certain circumstances, we know it can integrate into the human genome. Just remember that once released, it cannot be recalled. It perpetuates itself. Any mistake can perpetuate itself through generations. The fourth area is intelligence. We have no idea how our awareness, our consciousness, is supported by genes. In fact, that's the defining characteristic of biological organisms. They're awake. They respond. Their responses to situations is consistent with them being aware. Interfering with genetic functions, therefore, can compromise our intelligence and even our humanity. But we know so little about this area. Why would we start to interfere with our genes when potentially we're interfering with life itself? Fifth area is multitasking. DNA is non-linear. It's not like a book, or it's not like a set of Lego bricks, interlocking Lego bricks. Each gene performs many tasks in conjunction with other genes that may be remote from it along the genome. Genes don't operate alone. Editing genes inevitably causes off-target, unintended, mutagenic effects. In fact, this is the principle of genetic editing, well known. The sixth area is that we're dealing here with an epigenetic system. The whole system goes beyond the DNA itself. Genes function as part of wider cellular, physiological, and environmental systems. Even alterations to regulatory mechanisms in cells can permanently disrupt key ways genes express themselves. And just remember, mRNA vaccination is editing of regulatory mechanisms in cells. The seventh area is the rate of adverse effects. Rates of adverse effects or events associated with gene editing and gene therapy dwarf the rates of adverse effects from pharmaceutical medicines, which are already unacceptably high, and the third leading cause of death. An article in Nature, prestigious Nature journal, 15th of April 2021, concluded, quote, "Gene therapy trials are on the rise, but more needs to be done to understand the long-term risks associated with this type of treatment. There are growing concerns about the late adverse effects," that means the long-term adverse effects. These rates of adverse effects are not just sort of slightly higher, they're tens or even hundreds of times higher, or maybe even more, maybe thousands or tens of thousands times higher than the risks of pharmaceutical medicines. Because you're dealing here with the fundamental building blocks of life. The eighth area is regulation. Cells are self-regulating. Self-repair mechanisms in cells are designed to protect the integrity of genetic structures and carry out tens of thousands of repairs every day in every cell. And we have trillions of cells, maybe 37 trillion cells in our body. So deliberately introducing genetic changes amounts to bypassing these essential regulatory protections, which actually protect our life. The ninth area is electric fields. Genes work in tandem with electromagnetic fields to ensure developmental stages follow a pattern. Altering genes or applying electromagnetic fields has been shown to stunt or alter developmental stages. Again, this is an area that we know very little about. It's an evolving area of science, how genes work, how one cell becomes trillions of cells. Life begins with one cell. How it becomes trillions of cells and how it takes on shape and functions. Exactly how it does that is unknown, and yet we're prepared to alter the genome. Chemistry. Cells constantly receive and send chemical signals and extract energy from the chemistry of food. These enter through the cell membrane. The mechanisms that moderate the processes and the transport pathways in the cell are little understood. How do these pieces of energy and intelligence actually navigate their way through these 42 million proteins with all different kinds of proteins within the cell and reach their desired destination. All this is put at risk, certainly put at risk by genetic modification. The 11th area is shape. Shape is a fundamentally important molecular feature, and this determines interactions with cellular receptors, ion channels, enzymes, transporters, and a range of other complex processes. Genetic modification can and does alter biomolecular shape, and hence it can block pathways in the physiology that are vital for life. Number 12, vibration. The transmission of information in cellular systems is believed to be based on emission and resonance of electromagnetic patterns in the infrared frequency range generated by the vibrations of molecules. Altering genes can alter resonant vibrational modes of molecules and hence their function. Number 13, transcription regulation. RNA is both the direct output of genetic information in the DNA, and it regulates the process by which the DNA expresses itself. So we've got a chicken and egg situation here. We have a complex, you can't produce RNA without DNA, and DNA can't function without RNA. It's a whole system. We've tended to view genes as a series of parts, isolated parts with isolated functions. In fact, they function as a whole. So when you interfere with the part, you're interfering with the whole. So the exact, you know, it's not understood which is primary here, nor is the exact balance of the respective roles of RNA and DNA fully understood. Interfering with them, again, raises so many questions about what exactly will happen and what exactly will be altered or degraded by editing DNA. Number 14, identity. Each individual has a unique genetic identity. This is how they actually identify criminals. Each individual has a unique genetic identity. Editing genes alters our genetic identity or the identity of an organism. That could alter our personal identity. Outcomes among organ transplant recipients indicate that this can happen. Someone who's had a heart transplant may suddenly become interested in riding motorcycles and drinking beer, something that coincides with the interests of the person from whom they received this transplanted organ. How our identity, and you know, we know, we all know that everyone is completely unique. And if you alter genetic identity, as happened during the, let's think about it, during the pandemic, billions of people have been injected with identical genetic information. What has that done to the kind of world that we live in? We're only just beginning to find this out. Number 15, nutrition. Health and immunity is known to be protected by diets high in fresh foods. These are characterized by their natural genetic structure. Genetic modification can degrade natural nutritional profiles and hence undermine health. And this is a very important issue because DNA is an aspect of nutrition that is very little understood, just beginning to be understood, that we rely on the intelligence in the foods that we eat. It's not just proteins, cofactors of digestion, fats, carbohydrates, and so on, vitamins. It's also the freshness of the food, whether they are naturally containing DNA. That can be altered. Number 16 is cancer. there is an inherent risk of cancerous proliferation of gene-altered cells. A 2003 article in Nature concluded there is a risk of treatment-induced malignancy from retrovirally based gene therapies. This is a quote. Its specter has always loomed over the field. When we alter an organism, we're introducing the potential of weakness, and that weakness can extend to the destruction of the organism, the growth of cancer. Number 17, agriculture. Our food supply relies on a complex balance of factors underpinned by genetic structures with which we have co-evolved over very long periods of time. We have a symbiotic relationship with our food sources. There is no justification to introduce unquantified risks into agricultural systems, nor are there demonstrated benefits from previous attempts to do so. We read a lot about this in the newspapers. There are some companies who've made a great deal of profit, but our farming system as a whole, we can't find demonstrated benefits. In fact, we find a lot of failures. Number 18, pathogens. There's been a lot of examination during the pandemic of gain of function research involving the mutation of pathogens. This is highly risky. We have little evolutionary context to fight off highly mutated man-made pathogens. And we now know, and it's widely reported in the press, especially recently, there are very convincing reasons for fingering genetic modification as the source of the COVID-19 pathogen. Number 19, the biosphere. The introduction every year of 2,000 novel chemicals and approximately 2,000 novel chemicals and biochemicals into our food, medicine, and the environment challenges the evolutionary stability of our symbiotic relationship with the biosphere upon which our health and survival depends. This has found expression in the rapidly growing incidence of chronic and inflammatory illness affecting more than 50% of individuals. We have a limited capacity of individuals to deal with an increasingly complex world of chemicals and biochemicals in our food, medicine, and the environment. The last, 20, compliance. There are biotechnology regulations, but these have proved in practice to be hard to police and enforce. People working quietly in secret places are working on projects which, frankly, are only frightening. The only sure way ahead is to outlaw biotech experimentation. The plan of the National Party and ACT is to deregulate biotechnology by ending the, and this is their words, by ending the effective ban on gene editing and genetic modification in New Zealand. This runs contrary to available evidence and common sense. Biotechnology does not have any track record of economic, agricultural, health benefits. The reverse is the case. Moreover, these parties have not presented any substantive evidence of safety or effectiveness to the public, nor does any such evidence exist. It's a sort of a dream. It's been built up through public relations. Predatory commercial interests are trying to persuade governments to deregulate biotechnology and using every means that they can to populate the media with articles suggesting that really anything is possible, as we began with Tal Zak, chief medical officer of Moderna, saying that biotechnology has profound implications for the cure of everything from flu to cancer. Where's the evidence for this? It's not in our national interest to deregulate biotechnology. The whole process is being driven by the lure of vast profits for multinational corporations who have government contracts And that's just what we've been through with the pandemic. A lot of people have made an awful lot of money about something that was not safe and not effective. From our perspective as an agricultural producer, New Zealand, there are continuing market opportunities for high quality natural food that we produce. That these are products that are serving our nation well, serving our economy well. Deregulation of biotechnology will damage our national agricultural brand and crucially put the health of the nation at risk. I know this. I've worked in the industry. I work for Genetic ID, a company that certifies products, testing and certification company that certifies products are free of genetic modification in order that markets can be opened up for agricultural products. I presented here, you know, these are complex points perhaps, but political ideas are being floated without understanding the fundamentals of the technology, of biotechnology. This needs to change. It's rash to suggest that we can deregulate a field and protect the population. We can't. Thank you very much.